Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the workshop, Our Public Image. I'm an addict. My name is Ron. Tell you a little bit about myself, but before I do that, can you please help me open this meeting with a moment of silence, and we'll follow that moment with the serenity prayer, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Take a brief moment to introduce myself. Pete from Sweden, and I'm going to be conducting this workshop, and Pete's going to stick his head back in, like right there. I'm going to introduce you to Pete, and I've enlisted a member from the audience. Joe is going to help us out with our workshop, and he's agreed to be our recorder. He's going to record information for me. So Joe is from Delray Beach, Florida. I'm a member of your world board, but I also have a very powerful position in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm the coffee maker, and I open a group at the Just for Thursday group in Narcotics Anonymous in Winter Haven, Florida. And I've been proudly carrying the key. I had to turn it over for this week. And I gave David a promise that I will come back and get my key back. But I'm also a H&I panel member for mental health each Wednesday there in Winter Haven, and I'm really proud to be of service to Narcotics Anonymous. I got clean June 8th. I got clean and stayed clean on June 8th, 1989, and part of my legacy is I started Narcotics Anonymous in Washington, D.C., May of 1984, and I made a, I guess it was a God-given decision, and in August of 1988, I wasn't vigilant about my program, and I chose to go back out, and I learned a lot about the disease of addiction for 9 months because I found out it wasn't as easy to get back here. Somebody told me once it was easy to stay clean than to get clean, and I proved that to myself, and I experienced some of the yes of being back out. But fortunately, I have been back since 1989. I was nominated, both Peter and I were nominated and elected to your world board back in April/May 2004. So we're neophytes on the board, but I'm welcoming you to our workshop. The topic, our public image, got a lot of discussion at our last World Service Conference, and, along with some other things. You know, we needed to take a look at, you know, our public image, the infrastructure, Narcotics Anonymous, some of the things that I had experienced, and some of the other. We had some public relations roundtables where we interfaced with professionals from the community, and we wanted to get some feedback from them as to what they thought of Narcotics Anonymous. And some of the experiences weren't alarming, but it did get our attention to the point where there were times when in large cities they would professionals such as counselors would actually call our helpline for in trying to assist other members in finding a meeting, and there was no answer to the phone, or it took some time for someone to get back with them. And that was the image that some people, for the initial introduction, some people had gotten from our fellowship. There were also times when treatment professionals were actually sending their clients to Narcotics Anonymous, and there was some concerns about the predatory behavior that was going on in our room. And, you know, we have a lot more publics than we have with professionals that have been, when I think about the third tradition, the only requirement for membership is how to stop using. The public image, and I was a member of the public when I came in, when I initially came to Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know a whole lot about what to expect. I do know that my initial impressions when I walked into that room, May 10th, 1984, was that I wasn't sure that I was in the right place. I do know that I was looking for solutions. Some things I do remember. I was greeted at the door. I was welcomed. I don't remember a whole lot about what was said, but I knew that I was welcome in the room, and even though I didn't do it initially, somebody told me to keep coming back, and that was my introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. I also felt after the meeting, and I can remember this too, that I felt like they were, they welcomed me, but at the end of the meeting, I stood around waiting for some people to say some things or to talk to me or whatever, and it was attractive enough for me to come back, but at that point I felt like there were people were in cliques and things of that nature, but that was my initial perception of Narcotics Anonymous. In our fifth tradition, in carrying the message to the addict who still suffers, our public image is crucially important. And it's important too, you know, when we interface with our prisons and jails, and as in my current service commitment, going into mental health units, the relationship that we have with the professional staff, in that we don't do no call, no shows. If there's something that's an emergency that comes up, and we have an infrastructure in my area, wherein if myself and the panel leader are not going to come, we have contact numbers where we will get in touch with the staff at that mental health institution. And this is the reflection of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, as we enter that hospital. So our public image is impacted. Recently, that was an interreaction, a real positive interreaction. Many of you probably already know that the governor of Hawaii made a proclamation the other day. And since the conference, there's been a lot of work on the part of our groups, our areas, our regions, our zones, and Narcotics Anonymous as a whole to pay attention to our infrastructure, to actually nurture our public image. And it's reflective in the way the governor responded to us the other day. We're a very viable form of recovery from the disease of addiction, and the public knows that at this point, and it makes me proud, you know, when we get that kind of feedback. It's important that our image is that anyone is welcome to Narcotics Anonymous, and there's been some concerted efforts to target certain communities and certain cultures. I was pleased to know, I am aware, and for some of my friends, I remember telling my sponsor that there were 14,000 meetings a week in Iran, and it's the largest fellowship outside the United States of America. And he was surprised. And our public image, you know, in various parts of the world, you know, as NA being a viable form of recovery, is actually reflective in the way people are coming to our fellowship seeking recovery. I was attracted to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. I had choices. I didn't know I had choices, but I migrated and I went toward that which was most comfortable for me in my recovery. And Narcotics Anonymous, I was told to seek a fellowship and make a commitment to that fellowship. And it was not really difficult because I was exposed where I got clean. I was exposed to a lot of things as alternatives, at least alternatives or options, you know, for my recovery. Some of the issues that we face today, I haven't witnessed anything that would embarrass me here in Honolulu, both on a personal level or from what I've seen from other people. We are a reflection. I've talked to some of the cab drivers or the professional staff around the hotels, and I'm a proud member of Narcotics Anonymous, and again, that's a reflection of our public image. That's enough about me. I just wanted to introduce the topic of our public image, and we're going to interact today as a group. And starting off with what are some of the traditional ways that the public sees us. I talked about a few of the non-traditional ways and some of the formal ways, including being a panel member of an H&I committee. And what are some of the other traditional ways, such as PI presentations, that the public sees us? Can anybody in the audience help me? And Joe, can you help me out by helping us get some of those things out?
Anybody in the And we're looking at now, we're taking an inventory of ourselves, and we find that, and they were only like professionals. We found out that some of the professionals had problems with not passing out. They had problems with the way we were actually managing our phone line. They had problems they were concerned about some of the ways that we stressed when we came in to do public PI presentations. There were problems, as I mentioned earlier, with when they sent that young lady to the meeting with such her behavior rather than women coming back talking about the topic of the subject. They were more concerned about the guys that were hitting on him when they were touching him inappropriately while they were at the meeting and stuff. So that's an image. That's a reflection of what the public saw. And so that's what we're talking about today. And we have come to a point now where is that we talk about some of the traditional ways, some of the known ways that we know of as to how the public sees us and what they're using. That's what we come to a point here. You know, I know once you have presentations out of the way, and it's been given in a drug court that will be in the way.
We had the opportunity for the first time in my region or area to have.
What's your name and where you from?
I'm Charles H. Manatis, and I'm from Michigan. Being on the MS, I'm a board member of the MS, so that's where we live in the literature.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the opportunity for the first time in my NA history to locate our store in Detroit. And even Detroit said they do not want us in that community. A store in Detroit, and it had a lot to do with our image of how the greater society feels. So, is this a set or something from the world that maybe we can put a dialogue to present, not constant as it is today, to the city council?
Right, and that's what we're doing today. You know, in this workshop, you know, rather than me being a total information package for the audience, we're going to use the audience. We've got a lot of students that are supposed to be here in the room. What we're going to do right now is start taking a look at, and we've done in this week, and just give you some ideas, and we probably already submitted this as well. The other worldwide workshops been at the past year and a half that specifically focus on that kind of stuff. Specifically focusing on that public education, and we've been passing that information around. And each time we collect information, I tell you, we are talking to World Service. So there's information on these workshops. We've been keeping this information so that thank you. Again, to the audience, we're looking at and we're listing out traditional ways that the public sees these ladies from New York.
We
need
Bonnie from
New York.
And she's a very children are there running around, mothers or parents of children are not appropriately
Let's speak up. I was told the guy came in and said they're recording this. So to identify yourself and let's speak up, please. Meeting schedules. Other 12-step fellowships. Okay, I'm doing my best. So we're going to go right here with the guy with the hat, and I'm going to work my way around the room and stuff, and then next the lady next to him. Go ahead. Rusty. Do that again.
Continuity of service.
Service provisions. Continuity of service provisions.
Seen us grow and grow and grow and grow. And the pastor at that facility is still there. And he has allowed us for him to grow. He's a very understanding man. We've screwed up the church. We've done just about anything addicts do. And this man has a very good understanding of who we are and the process we're going through. And has allowed us to grow. And has allowed us to make mistakes. And has allowed our services to change and the faces to change and the people to carry the message. And those outside people that have somewhat of an understanding is a really good asset for us. They give us a place to meet, and they give us the opportunity to do what we do and to carry the message.
Thank you. And in summary, what Rusty has talked about, again, one of the traditional ways that the public sees us is through our service delivery. So that's in summary.
Yeah, Lisa, I'm an addict. I live in Michigan. I guess it just really needs to be clear, hospitals and institutions. Especially in Michigan, we have been getting some really positive feedback on our work in our jails and hospitals.
Okay, she's built upon what Rusty had talked about, but she was real specific. Rather than just services, she wanted to point out that a specific form of service being a hospital and institution subcommittees. Who was next?
I'm John Manatic from Boston, and been involved with PI in one form or another about 19 years. Belong to a couple of outside organizations who are involved with, I'm not a professional in the recovery field at all. In fact, I'm sort of an outside agitator. Some people look at me like that. But been on the boards of a couple of organizations, and the perception of us has been brought up here, that we're not a viable 12-step fellowship and all of that. And a lot of that is bias and prejudice that come from them. It's not necessarily fact. Some of it may be, some may not. But my main concern is our conventions, particularly Erie conventions. And the lack of
conventions sometimes fall along also in the lines of non-traditional ways of that the public sees us.
Sure, I mean the general public, how they most of them probably see us is in our convention when they're in hotels and they're seeing how we behave, how we interact with the society as a whole, so to speak. We've had a couple of horrendous experiences in Boston over the last few years with our convention, and it's put a serious dent in our ability to be able to function with the public. And I'll give one specific example. My sister-in-law is a concierge at a hotel that we had our convention at a couple of years ago. And people in that hotel, the general public, people that weren't addicts, were leaving in droves because of the behavior of the addicts at that convention. And and that may be some of their prejudice and things like that, like that gentleman that Lady was speaking about, that addicts will be addicts. I mean, that's we really can't do much. We can do something about that, but a lot of people aren't open to the change in people's lives. But my main concern, and I actually was talking to the general manager from that hotel, being a member of regional PI, after the fact, and my concern was that what's going to happen if their EAP in that facility in Marriott, are they going to send their people to Narcotics Anonymous? Are they going to send them over to AA? And that's a major concern, is that, you know, we impacted Narcotics Anonymous by the behavior of some addicts at that convention. And how does that impact us down the line? And where do these conventions cross over in the fact, does it affect NA as a whole? They say they're autonomous. Well, maybe not necessarily. And I think we have to take a look at that kind of stuff. You know, and stop whitewashing this and saying it's okay for us to do anything we want to do. It's not.
Thank you, John. And something else that John brought up, your interaction with other organizations and interaction with employee assistance programs. So we're looking at human resource departments and other organizations. Thank you. Now, you see how long this cord is. Somebody might have to meet me halfway. Right now, and I want you to keep in the back of your mind some of the non-traditional ways, but right now we're focused on traditional ways that the public, that our public image is exposed.
My name's Vicki, and I'm an addict from Portland, Oregon. Our area just recently opened an office, and the chairperson who said that we took a vote, and the chairperson we had didn't know the bylaws of our area, so he miscounted the vote, and we shouldn't have been in there. And now I'm getting, because I'm on PI and people know me from all over the country, I'm getting emails saying we need to just walk away from the lease rather than honoring the lease. And we have talked to World Services, and they suggested, of course, World Services doesn't tell anybody what to do, but their suggestion was to honor the lease. If we walk away, pay the lease like we should legally, because that is how we present ourselves. That way we don't go and say, okay, we can't afford this, we made a mistake, we're just going to walk away. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, well, you guys are just addicts, you're irresponsible, you don't carry through with what you say. And it's caused a lot of disunity in our area.
That is very important. And we might want to bear in mind, just keep that as in the back of our mind, that's a non-traditional way, leasing our facilities and stuff. So when we get there, someone, please remember to bring that up. Somebody's going to have to meet me at the court. It's just so long. Okay, through our families.
Aloha, my name is Diane, and I'm the RCM from the island of Kauai. One of the things that I see, I want to use this convention as a lot of us are, we are all clean addicts, but a lot of us still smoke. Outside of the convention center, there are people that are smoking, not using the ashtrays, not putting their cigarette out and dumping their butts in the garbage can. What is the chance of us, you know, pissing off the convention center and them never letting us come back here to do this again?
Behaviors outside our meetings and conventions. That's a very traditional way that the public gets to see us.
I'm Jane, and I'm an addict from Minnesota. I will. That's a big topic within our meetings, too. Behavior outside our meetings. There was lots of people that ran into when we sent them from our treatment facility to an NA meeting that were standing outside selling drugs, because it was in that part of town that our meetings are located.
Law enforcement interactions.
Yes. Another thing that happens a lot is language used in our meetings. You get lots of swearing. I work in a facility that has 14-year-old kids. They walk into a meeting and all they hear is F and B and every other word. And they hear a lot of using talk, not using recovery.
It's significant that you hear her. What she's saying is that, you know, if it's based on attraction rather than promotion, our language, that's a traditional way that our public sees us. Thank you.
Yes. Behaviors, too, of our addicts in our meetings. We tend to forget that we're in recovery, not still in active addiction. We've been kicked out of a facility because of fights between each other in a meeting. We've been thrown out of a meeting spot because of a gun being pulled out front of the meeting. We've been kicked out of a meeting spot because a husband and a wife got into a fight within the meeting. And we had to pull him off her in a bathroom. Now, those are how people see us. We have also gotten some. Here's a plus. I've named off a whole bunch of minuses. Us, as a fellowship, working within this facility. Well, this facility, which is the largest probably AA facility in the world, addicts are now working in that facility.
So she was not just focusing on our liabilities. She wanted to point out that as a positive, it's the way we work within our facilities, too. So it's not always a negative. It's a double-edged sword.
Employment.
As an, yeah.
John Snominati.
Hello, Tom.
That two ladies before me spoke on what I had in mind as far as the violence outside the meeting, But my mate, those therapists and counselors that really don't care too much about Narcotics Anonymous, that they give us a bad reputation pertaining to when they go to their conferences, they say, tell their members that don't send them to Narcotics Anonymous. It don't work. That's a force against us also. Therapists and counselors that don't have a history of 12-step programs.
He's talking about professionals, other professionals, professionals outside the fellowship. Now, we're going to take these last four, and then we're going to focus on the non-traditional ways that the public sees us.
My name is Maria. I'm an addict from New York. I'm a GSR and an alternate RSM. And in my area, the problem we have is with TCs, when they send people to NA meetings or NA people pick up people from treatment centers to go to meetings, many of the women are raped. And this is an issue. And now they're saying, well, we're not going to send them to NA anymore. So what we did was we tried to brief a telephone line because they were non-existent. When you would call NA in New York, there was no one there. And it boosted the resentment for these TCs that didn't want to send people to NA. We have lost lots of meeting spaces because of our behavior. And now we have our GSRs being informed about this behavior because we're going to die. Either we're going to change or we're going to die. So we're enforcing that we tell these GSRs, go back to your groups and tell them what's happening. Tell the men that this, their behavior really affects NA as a whole. It affects people coming to meetings. It affects people getting the right recovery and not going to AA because they're not alcoholics, they're addicts, and they get the wrong message. So that's my experience, and that's why I'm here, to learn more about it. Thanks.
Significant points brought up by Marie. Wasn't that right, Marie, from New York? Criminal activities. That's the public sees us through our own criminal activity, but she also came back and said we need to police ourselves.
Hi, I'm an addict named Rhonda from Southern California, and we've been having an ad hoc meeting once a month about this issue because of the World Service bringing this to the attention in one of our other conventions. And I'm a professional also in recovery, and so we do a lot of referrals to the 12-step programs, and of course I push my favorite. And what I get the feedback from is family having a negative opinion about just exactly what the lady before me mentioned, the behavior towards the younger kids in the meetings. But also we have positive, too, because they see that we are successful and they see that we change our lives. And so I have families that have been involved in the treatment with us that know and are, you know, are, when I say our public, they push our public image as a positive note, too. I think the main problem is we don't keep ourselves accountable. We don't pull each other up on our behaviors in the meetings. And we don't say, hey, that's not okay. We just stand there and let it happen. And I think what's happened is because we have so much treatment facilities coming in, which I think is awesome because we're saving more lives. At the same token, everybody's afraid to step up to the plate and say, hey, sit down, shut up, and listen. And I think we need to help ourselves.
She made a very significant point, and she talked about affirmations within the fellowship, our successes in recovery. Let's not forget that. Successes in recovery. And I like to highlight affirmations. Sometimes we need to stroke ourselves because we do have people right here in Honolulu, Hawaii, who were able to come here on their own dime, and we're dressed appropriately. We're carrying ourselves in a very, very attractive way. We're going to do two more, and then we need to get to, because we're going to split this in half, and we're going to talk about some of the non-traditional ways that the public sees us, non-traditional such as the Anyway magazine or recovery T-shirts and things of that nature. So start thinking about some of the non-traditional ways that the public interfaces with us and sees us.
Hi, my name is Mary. I'm from Tacoma, Washington. I am an addict. I'm sorry. I have a thing with knowing the people's last name, because I've had a lot of friends that's been sick and in the hospital, and I didn't know their last name, so I couldn't go and visit them.
So she's saying at this point, anonymity. And you know what came to my mind? You know, I used to be caught up in this. You know, I'm anonymous, but this is not an anonymous fellowship, you know, and so, but thank you for that.
I'm an addict named Josh.
Oahu is my home, so welcome. Something that I wanted to point out in the topic of conventions is that something that's really important for us to remember is we're not a business. This is not an institution or an organization. There's nobody here trying to impress their boss to get a promotion or a raise. And something that I've experienced over the past couple of days is that this really is a fellowship, and the fact that these people, it's safe to assume that everybody who's attending the 9 a.m. meeting on Saturday morning is here and is acting civil at the event and having a good time, but is representing NA well. But a lot of people who go to conventions, they're here for the party. It's a fellowship. It's a party. It's time to celebrate us being clean and sober. But we do it in a very outgoing, gregarious way. And I think that there's not very many events that take place here at the convention center where people are on vacation. Most of the events here at the convention center are people who are business-oriented, and it does cause some conflict in the community. I've gotten some feedback, positive and negative, from friends of mine who are not in the fellowship. So welcome to Oahu. Have a great time.
Thank you, Josh. I don't want to take too much time, but we do need to take a look at some of the non-traditional ways that the public sees us. And I mentioned a couple of them, some through our publications, such as Nas News, the Anyway Magazine, recovery T-shirts. You know, I've traveled a lot, and sometime on the plane, someone will come up to me and say, "What does that Internet A stand for?" And you know, narcotics. Sometimes, as soon as we say narcotics and narcotics, you know, and that's something that, you know, that initially for me when I came to the fellowship, you know, that was a part of me. I wanted recovery, but I didn't want that label on me at that point and stuff. You know, so that's something that, you know, it takes public relations within itself, within my own internal process, for me to come to a level of acceptance of who and what I am. You know, I got an NA ring on, and the flight attendant, even on this trip, saw my rectangle in the circle, and the first thing she says, "What does that mean?" I've seen a lot of those, and I got another necklace on too, and that's a reflection of our public image. So let's think about and come help us out, and just come on down and talk about some of the non-traditional ways within the way the public sees us. And Charles, you know, thank you for bringing that up earlier, because here we have information and we have the thought process that I remember my sponsor telling me this: you might be the only basic text that some people might see. And when we leave this room, through the experience, strength, and hope that we have right here within this audience, you know, you take a look at what we've done so far. And we can do this in our home group, we can do this in our area, we can do this in our regions, and raise the awareness. That's one of the most constant things about my recovery, that this is a constant source of awareness and stuff. Raise the awareness of who and what we are, and how our public image affects our third and fifth edition and NA as a whole. So we're going to, again, let's focus on non-traditional ways. And please identify yourself and where you're from, because this is being recorted.
My name's Ted, and I'm from Santa Maria.
Hello, Ted.
I like what you were saying about how, like, we label ourselves. I have a necklace on also, NA necklace. And I was telling the waiter over at the hotel that I was staying at that I was, you know, going to the convention and everything, and how it was going so well. And he was asking me, I told him about it, and he told me, or asked me this morning, the same guy, and said, "How's the convention?" And I said, "Very well, you know, everything." But also the mixed message, I don't know if that's really labeled as, do we say that in every meeting? I don't always hear that in every meeting. It's
clarity of our message.
So, because it isn't really labeled as in every meeting, we kind of say it in kind of weird ways where I'm from in Santa Maria. And I think it should be more of a thing, the mixed message, you know, like they say alcohol, it's not a drug. And then they say, we don't want to talk about alcohol or that in the meeting at all, because alcohol is a drug. Period. You know what I mean? And I don't know how that should be come across.
You came across real clear, and what Ted wanted to point out is that one of the non-traditional ways that it's important that we have a clear message and a clear purpose and a clear identity.
All right. Bob Addick, Chicago.
Hey, Bob.
I got to jump in on traditional. In Chicago, we got a billboard, you know, on the expressways. And then non-traditional ways, I don't know if I'm going to touch it or not, but we got people outside the At all world conventions, I see people selling T-shirts on the street, right? And in early on recovery, you know, due to the fact that I'm involved with the office in Chicago, I see that, and I go through all the bells and whistles to sell on alternative merchandise.
Personal application about traditions, concepts, and steps. Personal application about traditions, concepts, and steps.
personal application by division.
I need him in there. You got to come. You got to sell some stuff with me when we get back to Chicago. No, you're doing good. But what I see is, you know, in early recovery, when I say, and I see these, I say, yeah, this is wrong, you know, what you're doing, you know, and who are you representing? And we had a person in our own region selling bumper stickers a couple worlds ago, and we confronted him. We took a service position away from him because he wasn't representing Chicago under Narcotics Anonymous. And I see these people down the street selling the shirts, and I see they're from Washington, you know. Now, are these people selling for the area, and what's the area got to say about it? And then also the conflict, because, in there, you know, people come up and say, you can't sell the shirt. And all of a sudden there's a conflict. And then you got this guy with this big world convention, Narcotics Anonymous, with another guy saying, you rat, and then you got a conflict going on, you know. And there's ways to stop it, and that's through the police action. And they didn't take their stuff away from them, but, you know, it's...
And I'll tell you something else I think I heard from him, and it's already been brought out. Accountability. We are our own eyes and ears.
So we just don't buy it as a fellowship. If we don't help beat it.
Okay. So the emphasis on accountability.
That's what I'm talking about. What you just said, merchandise is sold out, so I'm going to buy this one, even though it's wrong, and we're looking.
So we're talking about personal integrity when we approach it that way. Personal integrity and accountability.
I'm an addict named Steve from San Antonio. See you in 2 years. I want to talk about, you know, on a personal and business level. I am in the entertainment convention event business. And Thursday, the San Antonio Convention Business Journal's here. I work with them constantly. The lady saw me come down the escalator. I had to go break my anonymity. What she saw is what she's known me for the last 10 years as a non-addict. Now she sees me as a recovering addict with a whole different light. So she sees me more on a, you know, the personal level and a business level that we represent our fellowship this way. And that's all I'm going to say.
I think I heard we are a reflection of our own personal recovery. He's talking about being the steps in action.
My name is Chip, and I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida, and I'm an addict. I see a lot of professionals in the therapeutic community who are afraid to tell their clients that they are an addict because it's going to color their client's perception of themselves. I see a lot of professionals such as lawyers, doctors, who are afraid for people to know that they're addicts. And I don't know how Americans with Disabilities Act covers some of this, and of course that and a cup of coffee, that and a quarter will get you a cup of coffee. You know, if you have to fight it legally. But I personally don't care who knows I'm an addict. And I see a lot of people who in the professional community are afraid to say I'm an addict. And they'll say I'm an alcoholic, but they won't say I'm a drug addict. And how can we tell everybody that there's so many of us out there, you can't fire us all?
You know, on a personal note, I'm the point person for the Public Relations Handbook, and that's one of the charges that we had from our last World Service Conference. And part of our charge and part of the emphasis in that book is that we need to look at who's not here. And in our public relations effort, when we look at who's not here, we're targeting. We're taking a look at our diversity. You know, we're targeting professionals and stuff. You know, that's something. There's nothing wrong with that. Again, we're on an anonymous fellowship. And we need to look at who's not in our rooms. And there are some professionals. There are some people. You know, there are some meetings. You know, one of the meetings I attend is not in the it's probably a better neighborhood than I have in between my ears sometimes. But it's not one of the best neighborhoods that you ever want to see. And we have people that live in certain other areas that won't come to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting because of that perception. But I don't want to get sidetracked, but we're still talking about some of the non-traditional ways that the public sees us.
I want to talk about keychains. Okay. The key tags. My name is Maria. I'm from New York. I'm an addict. Okay. But this is related to what you were talking about. You know, when I first got clean, when people saw my key tag, they would say, what does it mean? I said, never alone, I would say, never alone. And I was afraid to say Narcotics Anonymous. And what happened to me just recently was I was on the train, my Metro card is held together with a keychain. I had a pair of shorts on. My key tag hung out. I didn't mean it to hang out. I get on the train, and somebody comes behind me. He's with the other fellowship. He goes, why do you have to always wear those keychains, and your behavior is just off the wall? I said, I really didn't realize it was that. Please forgive me, you know, and I apologize. I tucked it in. He said, but you need to really be aware of it. You sell this merchandise. We don't have it. Why do you have it, and your behavior is off the wall? And I just said, wow. I said, I don't know what to say, and we talk about it all the time. My group doesn't sell keychains. We don't sell them. We don't give them out. We got literature. We got books. We got everything else because we want to help you change. My group is, it's about change. We don't want to enforce something that's going to think that you have a pink cloud and you're all great and everything because you're recovering, but your behavior hasn't changed.
She just emphasized constructive feedback from the public and family.
Yeah. Hi, I'm an anonymous addict from an anonymous place. Actually, this morning, the District Day reading was about anonymity. I know somebody that used to be in my area that this is about literature and like selling the red book on eBay for $3,500 or whatever. And that's, I mean, on a website that's like worldwide. So people could, I mean, I remember sending drugs to New York in a carved out book sealed in aluminum foil. So I don't know. I mean, if someone's seeing that it's $3,500 on eBay, they might be mysterious or curious about it. But, also, I think it's another non-traditional way that my home group is a closed group, but there's a lot of youth that come there with their parents. And when I obviously can tell that it's their parent bringing them to the meeting, I tell them it's a closed meeting because I'm a trusted servant at that group. And I tell them, you know, you can sit and listen, but actually they're scared to bring their kids to the meeting because they think they're going to buy dope there or something. And but I try to reassure them that, you know, you can sit here, and but eventually they're going to have to come on their own if they really want to get this because you can't help them. You know, it's a therapeutic value that I try to explain to them. But there's good and bad that I hear all the time.
What I heard from that is that having a personal stake in carrying a message, it takes the time out to talk to a parent to our public. Thank you. Now, we're going to have four more people, and then Pete, my colleague, Pete is with the World Board. Again, if those of you who came in a little late, I'm a World Board member from Florida, and Pete is a World Board member from Sweden. And we're going to touch on this, but you know, I heard a long time ago, if you're not part of the problem, at least part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So we're going to look at some solutions and stuff, and then we're going to turn that over to Pete with that. So let's just keep it brief, the next four people, about the non-traditional ways that the public sees us.
My name is Bob. I'm an addict from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And one non-traditional way we use, Narcotics Anonymous is used in my area, is through my job. We have people at our job, which I work for the school district. And, of course, people get high all over the place. You know, it's not, you know, nobody's exempt from from this disease. And, like, my boss gave me a last chance. So he kind of knew what my background is. So what happens is he sends addicts to several of us that work at different in different areas of our job. And what we do is we try to help them get to the meetings, give them the information they need to encourage them, to uplift them, because that's what I believe our job is. I've been in public information in my area for the last 13 years as well. And I think that's a major feat is to be in there that long and be able to carry the message. And that's what we do. As addicts, we carry the message by how we present ourselves. And I think as long as the way we live is clean and they continue to see that, that's how people will come to us.
Thank you, Bob. Bob brought up a very significant point, and I don't pay this a lot of attention sometimes, but the use of non-addicts in carrying our message. You know, he just talked about a referral from his boss. You know, that's important. The use of non-addicts, and that happens in so many different ways. I can remember at my home group, again, I opened the doors and I made coffee. But as a liaison from the building that we have, and I often get calls from her, and this woman is referring people to Narcotics Anonymous based on her interaction with just a couple of people from NA because she doesn't come to our meetings.
Hi, I'm Rhonda from California again, Southern California. I just wanted to say that I see that on traditional they had drug courts mentioned, but what I find is that on the non-traditional ways is that when the public wants to come into Narcotics Anonymous and they see all these people pushed in by the court system, they're afraid to attend. They even get the impression that we're part of that system. So they don't get sometimes that we're a separate entity from the law. And so I have people really apprehensive about wanting to come to our meetings because of that. And then I have other people coming to the meetings because they think that we are working for the probation and we're going to be able to help them get out of trouble. So,
yes, you're talking about not just clarifying who we are.
Hello again, my name is Diane. I'm an addict. I am the RCM to the Hawaii region. And one of our really big problems is the sale of T-shirts. And I'm going to repeat this again because as in RCM, one of the big things that we talk about at our level is how there are groups that we tell them that, you know what, you do it this way and this is the only way you can do it. And they choose to do it their own way and take it to the streets and sell material that is not part of this convention. And I find that to be a really big problem. And it has a lot to do with us as recovering addicts and the way that we behave. And it's very frustrating that, you know, no matter what we say, that, you know, it is about our own recovery and we can't change anyone else, but it does go on.
And Diane highlighted what we talked about earlier. We're talking about personal integrity. We're talking about where our own eyes and ears, and we're also focusing on accountability. We got one more Rusty, and then we're going to move into another phase of our workshop.
Thank you. I might fall into part of the next part of this segment. I was going to talk about education. And okay.
You're the first person coming up.
First off, again, I'm an addict. My name is Ron. I want to thank you all for allowing me to participate in this workshop, in this interactive workshop. You know, I won't even pretend that I have all the answers, but as a group, you know, we're a strong unit. And just want to look at, just in the short period of time that we've been here, and again, I emphasize because I feel the pulse of this audience. We have people who are making a difference. And you don't have to go to NA World Service every time you need a solution to your problem. The solution is within you. And what I'm talking about, just from this group, we've been able to highlight and raise our conscience on issues on traditional ways that the public sees us. And we can do this in our home group. We've done it at my home group. We can do this at our area service. We can do this on a regional level, the exact same way that we're doing this today. Again, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Pete, and Pete's going to move in, and as a team, we're going to take a look at how can I affect that public image? What can you do as an individual? Don't all jump up here at once and stuff. And I want you to remember that they are recording this. So if you will, identify yourself and where you're from and be clear. And we want to make sure that we have enough time for everyone to come in with some of the solutions that we have to our problems with our public image. But don't forget, if you want to accentuate some of the positives, some of the assets that you see that we have in terms of our solutions, please feel free to do so. So we're going to start off right here with Rusty and Come on up.
Hi, my name is Rusty, and I'm an addict from Chicago. I went to a comedy show last night and enjoyed it quite a bit. It was a funny guy. But the first part of the comedy show, the man started out about how we our liquor cabinets are full, because I don't think he understood that Narcotics Anonymous thinks that alcohol is a drug. Common mistake if you're not a member of the fellowship and it says Narcotics Anonymous. Why wouldn't you think alcohol is a drug, you know, if you weren't educated by us? I don't know what the answer is, or if we can send mailers out, or if we could do it one person at a time, get in after he walks off the stage and say, you know, I like your show. You might have this little misconception. Just wanted to let you know that we can't drink either, or we don't want to drink either, you know. And I think that's how we got to do it, you know, one person at a time, and maybe we can, you know, get some of the attitudes changed.
But I think what I heard is one person at a time, we try to go out there and make a difference. Personal recovery.
I'm John, I'm an addict from Boston, and I'd like to talk about how we take this into our workplace. I've heard a couple of people allude to that. I'm a self-employed businessman, and my partner and I have a business where we're hiring people from Narcotics Anonymous. We've made a choice to hire other addicts. And this example is not something new. Other people have done this, and ethnic groups and cultures have done this for years and years. They take care of their own. And I think it's important that we take a look at doing that, too, that many of us have not had the chances that many people that aren't addicts have had to be able to, maybe because we're getting a later start in life, but there's a number of factors involved. You don't have to tell you. But by doing that and having a company that's viable and that's resourceful and that is, you know, done good job not only businessly, but how we deal with our clients,
how we interact with them, how we go into people's homes. And I know when I worked for my father, the first thing when I went to a person's home was go to the medicine cabinet and start rifling and see what the hell was in there. Now, we're involved in people's homes every day, and myself, my partner, and the people that work for us, and, you know, we don't have to be concerned about that kind of thing because of the fact we have people with integrity and that have made a choice to do the next right thing, not only with staying clean, but carrying that into the rest of their life, in this case here in the business world. So I don't go out and let my clients know. I don't let it go out and most of the other people know in our business that we are recovering addicts. But we've had an opportunity to affect other people's lives because of the fact that over time we've built relationships with these people and they find out that we are. And if there's some of them are amazed. They can't believe that, you know, you guys are addicts and you do this kind of thing. I think that kind of one-on-one interaction with the public in general in business life or whatever, your home life, your neighborhood, your business community, your political community, whatever it happens to be, we all have an opportunity to affect another individual and see addicts in a different light. So.
Thank you. And the emphasis, again, on personal recovery. Let our recovery be a reflection of our public image.
Hi, my name is Lori. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, from the Tri-State region, along with Bob over there. And the bottom line, all these issues can be eliminated very simply. Like, we come from Roll Strong region. We have 495 meetings a week, 16 areas. And when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, our oldest meeting is 24 years old, so we've been in recovery for 24 years. And here's what I was told. Women stick with women. Men stick with men. Don't, like, hang out with men. Don't, women, you know, I mean, that's the bottom line. Sponsor. Get a home group, get a sponsor. And you know, work the steps. And that worked. You know, and that has worked in my region for 24 years. And I know that the world brought in about, like, you know, those issues, and they asked us about to have because I want a convention committee about the sexual predators. But here's the thing. If we started a women's meeting 2 years ago, because we have a women's meeting on our regular meeting, we have a women's basic text and a general discussion, so we were too big for the women's meeting, so we started another women's meeting. The women said like this, there's no men to get dressed up for. And so unless you tell people women stick with women, and because you're not going to get any recovery by sticking with the men, it's a bottom line, is it's sponsorship. Sponsorship. Everything comes from sponsorship and from telling the people what to do. Sponsorship is the backbone of our program. Unless one addict helps another, the right way, and we're not all here for the same thing. Some people are here to get married, look for women, look for men. You know, roles are reversed. But the thing is, if you want to do this, and you find people to hang out with, you're going to get clean and stay clean. If you go with people that don't want, you know, that don't have, like, have the bad things, you're not going to get clean, and you're going to have these problems. So, again, it is personal recovery, but we do need sponsorship.
Thank you. And sponsorship and something else that she mentioned, mentoring. You know, it don't have to be a sponsee. And what she was talking about, she asked the women, who are you dressing up for? And the same thing with men or whatever. You know, we have a personal stake in because without any, where would I go?
My name is Cricket, and I'm an addict from Spartanburg, South Carolina. One of the points that she just touched on, and two of the big words for me are responsibility and accountability. And, you know, sponsorship has already been touched on, and I think that that's very, very important. As far as my sponsorship chain, we're not only going to work the steps, we're going to work the traditions, and we're going to work the concepts. And when you talk about the 12 concepts, you have people that don't even know that this piece of literature exists. And one of the things that I have found out about being in service work for all the years that I've been here, and I've been in PI for over 6 years, is the fact that people don't read. The World Service Office and our fellowship has provided us with an answer to any question that I have seen arise since I've been clean. But if we do not read the literature, and if we do not follow the guidelines, you know, then we're going to be in places where we're at right now. So I think it's sponsorship. It's, you know, working in our home groups. Working in our home groups. I've heard people talk about behavior in a home group. You know, we close two of our meetings because we have professionals coming into our meetings, and then addicts sit there and we share and we cuss, and then they take that back out with them. Well, we close those meetings, but we have meetings that anybody can come to. You know, I want people to know that when you're in my closed meeting at my home group, say what you need to say. And if it's an open meeting, we need to remember that, you know, the non-addictive public do not follow our traditions. And we need to be mindful of that. So if I need to share something from the gut that I'm probably not going to be able to leave the cussing out of, I need to go to a closed meeting.
But still, I say it's the literature.
A third of participation. That's what you did.
Thank you very much.
That was good. Thank you.
Okay. I'm Beth, and I'm an addict from the Big Island. And I'm going to try to be quick with this. One of the things that I see as a solution is starting women's meetings, starting teen meetings, and being willing to be in service.
What's a teen meeting? Help me out.
NAR non-teen.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're taking group conscious. Yeah. We're taking group conscious in our area right now to see where there are meetings that people are willing to be accountable and responsible to host a teen meeting next door to our meeting. Are there facilities where we have two rooms where we can do this? And so that there are some adults who are willing to work with the facilities that they're coming from and kind of be a representative and say, your youth will be safe here. And it's a tricky thing because they can't legally leave these youth. So we're having people who are not affiliated coming in to close meetings and stuff like that. We want the youth to come so they can get the relationships, and when they come out, they have somewhere to get sponsorship. At the same time, we have these people coming in who really shouldn't be there. So we're working on it right now, but I really think it's just wanting to be in the solution and starting the women's meetings, being willing to start up new meetings. The drug court I work with in my professional arena, and it's a really difficult one for me because what I'm seeing happening on the Big Island, where we have very small meetings and a very small community, is people are coming in who don't want to be there and they're not following our traditions, and anonymity isn't being respected. I'm watching a lot of newcomers who need this program walk right back out because they're sitting in a room with someone else who's working with the same CPS caseworker as them and who's telling their caseworker things. And I'm really concerned about the longevity of our program if we're watching newcomers not feel that they can trust the rooms. And this is the first time I've seen that trust being broken. And had that been the situation when I came in, I don't think I would have stayed. And I'm very concerned about that. And last quick thing. I wish we would have gotten media on the non-traditional, and that's why I came here. I have concerns about how we're being viewed by the motion picture industry, how they're portraying us, and also the control of how we're advertising.
Thank you. And she brought up a significant point. Someone sent me a copy, an email from San Jose, California, and it was about that newcomer orientation. They have an outreach, a fellowship development committee within their area of service. So newcomer orientation is one of the solutions and stuff. Fellowship development. I want to ask you all to do something as we're getting cut. We're winding it down, but we're still going on. Can anybody lend me one of their hats or some bag or something? I'll tell you what I want to do. We got some gifts, some literature here. And one of the things that someone talked about was literature. And if you don't mind, once I get this hat, is write your name down, one name at a time, just one name, and put it in this hat and circle it around. And as we get ready to close, I'm going to make a drawing, and we're going to give away some Miracles Happens before we finish this up.
My name's Laura, I'm an addict from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Albuquerque. John touched on this. I think first I have to show up in life, all over my life, as a person of integrity. And then like the reading today talked about anonymity, some people may later find that I am an addict in recovery. And all that they know about me then becomes what addicts are. And so talked about personal recovery. Also, it's these practicing the principles, being a mentoring kind of fellowship, and creating relationships that allow us to strongly hold up what we stand for and not allow people to act outside that. And some of that comes from education, as we educate people in PI, in H&I, it has been touched on with the personal recovery and the sponsorship.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Don't forget to put your name in the hat, please.
My name is Pam. I'm an addict from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
One of the things that our area has started doing at conventions, because we had problems, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, was on everything that we hand out, including like the itinerary of everything there is to do during the day, the workshops, it says remember that your behavior is a reflection of our fellowship. So communication is a way to narrow that down. I think communication is just really vital in helping people, because especially in local conventions, the behavior here I've seen has been, I haven't seen anything that hadn't been, you know, fairly acceptable, maybe the cigarette butt thing, but I haven't seen cigarettes anyway. So, you know, but in our local convention, we have a whole lot more newcomers than we do here, and it really gets out of hand sometimes. So, you know, we had it, as a matter of fact, in one convention, posted on the elevators, and, I mean, it said it everywhere, because if you keep one person from coming into this fellowship, you know, that cannot save their lives. So it's really important to me that we really communicate to everyone. Everyone needs the communication. Sometimes I need the reminder, keep your behavior in check.
Thank you. And the emphasis was placed on communication. And she not only talked about verbal communication, but she emphasized the fact that flyers are posted at conventions about behaviors. I want to take the time. This guy, I hadn't seen him in a while, but it's the way we affect our people. I was a couple of years ago, his name is Michael, and I remember him because we sat down and broke bread at a table in Woodland Hills, California, and Michael kind of gave me some information on his personal recovery. And Michael didn't know it, but I was going through some difficult times then and stuff, you know. So sometimes just the way we treat our fellow members and stuff, you know, on a personal level, is probably the greatest message that we can carry in Narcotics Anonymous. So I ran up and gave him a hug. Not that Michael is unique to the group, but he was unique to me at a time of difficulty. So London Mike, too, right? Right, Mike?
Yeah, I'm Michael. I'm an addict.
Hi, Michael.
First of all, I'm from New York, okay? Now, I live in London. And I'm just taking this first, the reason I say that is because, you know, New York is, you know, I just have to say, it's like it's a special place for me. And so I'm looking at the first thing on this, NA phone number confusion. And I got to New York in 1999. The first time I'd been there since I got clean, this time around. And I called up, I mean, I have this strange family relationship where my mother only allows me to stay with her on her condition. So when my flight arrived 3 days earlier, and I was trying to hook up with meetings. And my home group in New York was 9 a.m. wake-up meeting at St. Veronica's Church, Christopher Street, when I go there. 9 o'clock, Monday through Friday. I arrived Friday after the meeting was over, and it had moved, and I called up the helpline, and I couldn't get a hold of someone. I couldn't find out where the meetings were. I went to AA, and I saw a lot of people there who needed this program. So anyway, in a general sense, you know, there's a passage in the group booklet that says the groups have a responsibility to educate the members in the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts. You know, here we are, under 100 people in this room, maybe a little over 1% of the people coming to the convention, probably not even a person from each region here. And, you know, if there isn't, people don't understand how important the service structure, the connection between the group and the service structure and the world and the region and so on and so forth is. Okay, so that's one thing. The other thing is, I mean, I'm just going to mention two target groups. People want to take down the UK website is ukna.org. It can also get reached through the NA over regional links. We just put some information out about reaching parents. We have an approved local literature pamphlet with 13 stories about parents getting help through our service structure, where we have a parents and carers committee, and we facilitate groups, we raise money, help them to pay for childcare and stuff like that. And it's on there. Anybody can have a look at that. And old people, my father, my stepfather and my father both came into recovery in their late 60s, but my stepfather had been in AA when he was 49, and he was 25 years clean. And then he relapsed, and he got into a group of Medicare people, of alcoholics over 70, and he was the only person in that group who was had any kind of recovery experience before they retired. So, you know, it's another target group. The AA has, you know, we can look at our, you know, true spiritual principles and everyone come to look at some of what the other fellowship does. They have a pamphlet on that.
Identify our many publics. I'm a public within Narcotics Anonymous.
the parent or public in that AIDS diversifies them from other members of narcotics. Thank you, Mike.
Okay.
Give me another hug. Thank you.
I'm Jane, and I'm an addict. First of all, I want to thank Narcotics Anonymous World Board here for coming up with one of the best solutions our area's had, and that was taking your group's inventory. That was one of the forms that our area sat down and said, every group needs to do your own inventory. And we've done it. And it has improved our presence, our behavior within our groups, how the public views us. A perfect solution for our groups, your group inventory.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
How you doing? My name is Curtis from Philadelphia, and I'm at it. I just have a quick, well, one thing was taking your group inventory, because it's real important that we look at the group as a whole. But the real problem I'm having, and I need some feedback, is the drug court sending people to the meetings, because they come in and disrupt, they might need the help, but they disrupt the whole meeting, and the newcomer who is there, he's just stuck, you know. And signing the papers that they sent, I never did believe in that. So if I get some feedback on what other groups are doing, you know, let me know.
So what we had was we had a member who reached out, and that's another thing that we can do in our workshop. And he asked for other experience, strength, and hope within the room on how do you deal with signing court cards. Well, it's not just court cards, because we have certain professions such as nurses and doctors that send people in the same thing. So identifying people who, how do you deal with signing of cards in and after the meeting? Thank you.
Charlie, I'm an addict. I'm from Florida. The thing that I wanted to, more or less articulate on a little further was, the leadership and the how we carry the message to the newcomer and things that I've seen up and down the East Coast. I live in Florida now. I do meetings both in South Florida, North Florida, in Atlanta. And one thing that kind of disturbs me is from the standpoint of sponsorship, when I hear these extremely hard, almost vulgar manners in which they feel like sponsors are supposed to get the message, the way they talk, the profanity, which I've been guilty of myself in the past, all this stuff. But at the same time, I feel that one of the things that we have to be real clear about, I think everybody in this room is very passionate about Narcotics Anonymous, and the longer I stay here, the more I love this place. But we have to be careful about our own fears and as we address these issues of public image.
Thank you, Charlie. After these two, we're going to have a drawing. We wind up that time.
Hey, family, I'm Eddie Nate Lawrence. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hello, Lawrence.
Okay, when I came into fellowship, they was telling me about innate language and stuff. I think that one of the solutions that we got out of, we're not using innate language anymore and stuff because we had grown and it's been kind of like look past and stuff. So if we use the in a language and stuff, maybe we won't have to go through some of the difficulty that we're going through. In other words, enforcing it a little bit more.
Focus on the
clear internet,
right? Yeah. And our last thing, and then we got some things we want to talk about. We have a process that we agreed to participate in.
I'm Alan. I'm an addict, and I live here in the Big Island. And, you know, I'm really glad to be here and be able to open my mouth here. At our regional meetings, and at a lot of our service meetings, we have an open forum in the beginning of our meeting. And lately, and people can say whatever they feel like saying. It's not a recovery meeting, but it's about like how they feel before we get the meeting going. And I think we picked that up from some guidance we got somewhere along the line from the World Service Office. But what I want to say is, a gentleman he said how few of us there were here talking about service. Well, it's a tiny fraction. This convention is here in this room talking about service. And one thing I always talk about in open forum is how do we talk to each other in a service meeting? How do we respond to each other's, the fruits of our labors? Like if a person is given an assignment, to do something and then they do the best they can, and how do we talk to them about what they've accomplished in a positive way. And I think it's just something I've learned through the application of spiritual principles in my life, which I've learned all through Narcotics Anonymous, is how to help someone rather than to just tell them they're not doing it right, get out of here. You know, how do we talk to each other is what I'm into.
Again, I'm an addict. My name is Ron, and this is...
Hi, I'm an addict. My name is Pete.
On behalf of NA World Services, we would like to thank you all for coming in and helping us participate in the workshop on our public image. One thing that's been clear is that if we could do that in this meeting in an hour and a half, you can do that at your home group in an hour and a half. It doesn't take that much time. Now, what we have, if you take the time to look, you know, since we've been in here in that short period of time, we've identified some of the problems, the traditional ways that the public sees us, and some of the things that are very creative that wouldn't come to mind right away. We also identified some of the traditional ways, or non-traditional ways, that the public sees us, but more important, as a collective group, we've looked at some of the solutions to our problem. Now, you can call NA World Services, you can call California, or you can email California, you can write California and get additional information, or you can start right where you live, grow from where you planted, and actually do a workshop. One of the reasons why we do these workshops all over the place is that it's almost like a training to training. You see, it's not that complicated. We want to go through another process, and I've asked a friend to come up and help me with this, and we have some gifts that we would like to give to the audience. It's called Miracles Happens, and what we would like to do is, what's your name again?
Laura.
Laura, if Laura calls your name, please come up and take your book.
Andy D. Mark Williams.
I'm Mark. I'm an addict from Pensacola, Florida. Responsible communication. When we get a call from a drug court or from the facility where we hold meetings, call them back right away.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. And again, another reason for having the workshops. You know, we can't, as an individual, have the answers, but as he said, but just as he had his idea, someone else could expound upon it. Who's next?
Biker Mike. Larry S. Jerry D. Brian P. from Denmark. Marie T. from New York. John McIsaac. Bob J. And Jimmy K.
Ooh.
I would like to say that as World Services had directed us, we have tried roundtable workshops in the World Services style. We just did it last month at a festival we had in Albuquerque. We had more energy around this sort of a workshop than we'd had for any other workshops that were sort of like little mini speaker meeting types. Much more energy, much more excitement around the roundtable discussion style of workshop. It was very, very effective. Thank you.
No.
Okay. I'm not done with you guys either. Okay. Now we have what sponsorship books?
Yeah, nine more.
Eunice B.
Pernilla.
That's good, my new friend. Laurie Ann Waltz. Jeff D. Pete on half of a business card. Mike C. from Michigan. Curtis B. from Philadelphia. Diane L. Kauai. Holly H. from Phoenix.
Okay, we have a usual and sometimes unusual way of talking to you, Kelly. Join us. Let's have it out here.